Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. As usual, I am your host, Cody. And let's get into it. So we're wrapping up the month of January with our last entry into the Coen Brothers movies. The reason I saved this movie for last is, one, it's their most recent movie. But also, it's because it's six different movies in one. It's basically six vignettes as part of one big anthology. It is a Western anthology, American Western anthology, written, directed, and produced by the Coen Brothers. So the six parts to this are The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which is the name of the actual movie. Near Agandales, I think it's called. Agandolins? I don't know. It's a Spanish word of some sort. We'll get to it in a minute. Meal Ticket, The Golden Canyon, The Gal Who Got Rattled, and The Mortal Remains. I'll go into each one. I won't break them down. I won't tell you everything about them. I'll just briefly talk about them in and give you the actors that are the notable actors that are in it. In each one, each of the six vignettes, as they refer to them as. So the first one, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Stars a returning member of the long-running member of the Coen Brothers movies is Tim Blake Nelson. He plays Buster Scruggs. You have Willie Watson, who plays the kid. You have David Kromholtz, who plays the Frenchman in the saloon. You have Clancy Brown playing Curly Joe. So Tim Blake Nelson, we talked about before, a couple times on here, actually. He was in O Brother, Where Art Thou, which is where we talked about him before. Tim Blake Nelson is an amazing actor in general. Enough about him. We don't need to go over that too much. Willie Watson, I didn't know who this was when I watched this the first time, but he is a American singer-songwriter, guitarist, banjo player, actor, and founding member of the Old Crow Medicine Show. So for the folks who don't know what that is a basically a music group that plays a bunch of different stuff, I believe. I didn't know too much about them, but they've done a bunch of stuff music-wise. Anyways, so he's a musician. He has been doing it for, since like 2000-something. I don't know. I didn't really look it up. I should have looked it up before I started mentioning it. 2014. Was his solo stuff. He appeared on stuff earlier than that, I guess. Oh, 1998 was his original one with the Old Crow Medicine Show. But he appeared on a couple different albums from other people. He plays the role of the kid in the first vignette. You have Clancy Brown, who plays Curly Joe. Who has one of the funniest scenes in the entire movie, and he's in it for 5 minutes at the most, I think. But he gets his face shot off repeatedly by his own gun, by his own hand, no less. But it's pretty hilarious. So Buster Scruggs is a cheerful, singing cowboy. He touts himself of being this he basically talks about himself and the songs he sings and how he's this amazing hero, and he's telling a story. And when you first see him, it's believed that he's kind of out of his element. He shows up to this cantina full of outlaws, and he effortlessly shoots everyone as they reach for their guns, and then he heads out of town, and then heads to the saloon that the rest of the movie takes, or the rest of the vignette takes place in. So the big thing about this particular vignette is it is a musical, I guess you could really say. A lot of the story, so I mean a little bit of the story. It's not like they sing and dance in every scene, but he sings in different songs, and he's telling you stories about stuff, and he tells you he sings a song about Surly Joe that everyone kind of gets a kick out of, all the patrons in the saloon. Then Joe's brother arrives, dismayed to see his brother dead, and then challenges Buster to a gunfight in the street. Buster agrees. He shoots him dead, but he makes a show of it. He basically shoots his fingers off, so he can't shoot the gun. And then with his last bullet, he shoots him in the head and kills him. I believe it's his head. I want to say it's his head. And then another newcomer, the kid, shows up, challenges Buster, and Buster's like, okay, well, I happily oblige this one as well. And then is shot dead by the newcomer. And then Buster's ghost shows up, basically starts to fly out of his body, singing a song. And then it's a duet, in a way, with the kid while he's flying up to heaven with his angel wings playing a lyre. It's a pretty interesting little way of doing it. I should say this beforehand. So each one of these gets darker and darker as it goes. The first two, so the Ballad of Buster Scruggs and Near Al Gondones, I believe it's called, they start off with a bit of humor and they get darker. By far the most lighthearted one is the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. It's the only one that actually is, I would even say at the end when, after he's dead, and he's floating up to heaven, is still the happiest you're going to be as you watch these. They're just going to get darker and darker and darker as we go. Until the last one, it was just plain old fucking just black as night, basically. So the next one, Near Al Gondones, I believe is what it's called. Very short cast. The only two notable people in this one are, I say notable, the next couple are really short, a really small cast, but the most notable is James Franco, who plays the cowboy, and Stephen Root, who plays the teller. Ralph Fiennes plays the man in black, and Jesse Lunkin plays Drover. They don't actually matter, not too much. They're barely in it. So basically, a young cowboy tries to rob an isolated bank on the prairie, but he is essentially thwarted by the bank teller, played by Stephen Root, expertly enough, and is shot at a couple times with hidden shotguns. Soon as that happens, he grabs a bunch of money, he leaves, thinks he's about to get away, but he hears this noise and gets shot, and then he turns and sees that the teller is now covered in pots and pans. He keeps yelling "pan shot" because every time James Franco goes to shoot him, it hits a pan that he's wearing because he's covered in pots and pans, and every time it hits, he cackles "pan shot." He then knocks James Franco out with the rifle butt that he has. When James Franco regains consciousness, he is sitting upon his horse under a tree with his hands tied and a noose around his neck. And a lawman and his posse, who have captured him, ask him if he has any final last words, since they convicted him and sentenced him to death while he was semi-conscious. He is about to say something, and all of a sudden one of a bunch of Comanche warriors slaughter the lawman and his posse and leave him hanging from the branch, and with on his horse. So that's, you know, pretty awesome. Then at the end, a drover happens by. So a drover, if you don't know, read the definition here for you. A drover is a practice in moving livestock over long distances. So this dude sees him, goes over, helps him out, and then they're riding together with the cattle, and he mentions how, you know, he could use a hand like him, and he could help him drive the horses. So he does, or the cows and stuff. So he does help him drive them. However, Drover is actually a rustler, and is promptly chased down by another lawman's posse. The posse captures the cowboy and takes him into town, where the sheriff summarily orders him to hang. As the cowboy stands upon the gallows with three other men awaiting execution, he spots a young woman in the crowd and mutters, "There's a pretty girl," before he is hung. It's very dark. Pretty rough. So that's near Algodones. I can't read that. I don't know what that is. The next one is where I realized that this set of movies is going to get pretty dark, and it's going to be pretty fucking quick. Now, I say that this one is super fucked up, much like the fifth one. But then the fourth one kind of has a little bit of a lighter tone to it, but it's also very dark in general. I'll get to that in a minute. But you have, so the third one is called Meal Ticket. This one has only two notable actors in it. Liam Neeson plays the impresario, I believe it's how it's pronounced, and which is a traveling entertainer, essentially a businessman, a guy who puts on performances for people but doesn't do the performances. He just sets them up and everything like that. And then the other person is Henry Melling, who plays Harrison as the artist. So Harry Melling, I had to look up because I had never heard of him before. But then I had heard of him. I just didn't recognize that I had heard of him. He plays Dudley Dursley in the Harry Potter movies. I did not know that because he looks drastically different. But that's who he is. So you'll know him. He's done a bunch of stuff, stage stuff, which is, when I looked at it, I know why he was picked for this, because he does a lot of Shakespeare stuff. And he does Shakespeare monologues and stuff in this vignette. So when I saw this one, I when it first started, I had no idea what was going on. So Harrison, again, played by Harry Melling, is quadriplegic. Jeez, a quadruped, that'd be fucking easy. He is a young man who has no arms and no legs, along with the impresario, played by Liam Neeson. They travel from town to town in a wagon that converts into a small stage, where Harrison theatrically recites classics such as Shelley's poem Osmodeus. He does biblical verses about Cain and Abel. He does works from Shakespeare, in particular Sonnet 29. And then he finishes off with Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. So after a performance in this small town, Liam Neeson's character will collect money from the audience at the end of the performance, and then they basically will go on their business. So this goes through, you see it's happening, there's a montage of this in a couple of towns, and as he goes on and goes on, you can see the weather's getting worse, it's starting to snow and things like that. And the crowds are getting smaller, the money's getting smaller, things like that. And then basically he starts getting no money from any from the performances. So you see and you see the stuff outside the performances, really where it gets really dark, is because he has no arms and no legs. Liam Neeson's character has to feed him, he has to clothe him, he has to help him go to the bathroom, things like that. And Liam Neeson, I don't think he says a single line until the last little bit of it. But it's, I mean, it's just really dark. He carries him on his back like a backpack. He goes to a brothel with him one time where he doesn't actually get Liam Neeson's character gets a prostitute. But he sets him in the corner and, like, essentially he's in the room with him. It's really fucking weird. And you think, oh, that's pretty dark. And, you know, like, I kind of got this thing, this idea where in my head I'm like, oh, Liam Neeson's going to die. And this unfortunate no arm, no leg guy is going to suffer and essentially starve to death and freeze to death in the back of this wagon that he's in because Liam Neeson's character is dead. But it's not how it happens. It actually goes worse. During one of the performances, Liam Neeson's character sees that there's a bunch of people crowd around this other wagon watching a performance. He observes, basically he sees that it's drawing a crowd, and so he goes over, and it's a chicken that can perform basic math by pecking a painted number to an answer of addition or subtraction yelled out by the audience. So then Liam Neeson's character gets this idea. He's going to buy the chicken. So he buys the chicken. As they're driving, you kind of get this feeling like, what's this chicken going to do as part of the show? Well, that's the thing. They're driving and they're in this mountain pass, and they stop on this this very narrow pass. There's a bridge over a rushing river. So then he stops the wagon, he gets out, he walks over to the center of the bridge and drops a large stone to gauge the water's depth before returning to the wagon and wearing a faint smile. In the final scene, you see him returning, resuming driving the wagon with the caged chicken as its only passenger. And you realize that he just dumped the armless, legless kid into the water in that freezing cold rushing river below the bridge. And it's kind of fucked up. So that's what I knew after this one, after Meal Ticket. I was like, this isn't gonna get any better. This is probably gonna get worse. So the next one, All Gold Canyon. All Gold Canyon stars Tom Waits, who's the only notable person in this, and someone named Sam Dillon, who I don't know who he is. But Tom Waits plays the prospector, and he is fantastic. Like, fantastic in it. He's insane. So basically, it's a prospector. He basically goes into this valley where it has all his wildlife, and he makes noise. They run away. He goes there, and you basically find out he's basically trying to identify a source of gold. And so you see him doing the sifting everything with the pan in the river, and he's basically trying to find a vein of gold. So he's narrowing down, he's digging holes, and he's finally trying to narrow it down. Finally finds what it is. He's digging into it on one day. Then when he's got this large sack, he gets shot in the back, and he falls face down. The young man jumps into the hole, steals the gold, sitting there while he's watching blood rush out of this prospector he shot in the back. The prospector wakes up, grabs the kid's gun, and then shoots him and kills him. Then he cleans up, assesses his wounds in the stream. So he cleans himself up, assesses his wounds, confirms that it's not lethal. He finishes mining the gold, pushes the young man's body back into the hole, serves as his grave, and then departs the valley. So overall, it's pretty fucking bleak. This one, like I said, it rebounds the darkness for a little bit, but still, the performance of Tom Waits in this is really what makes it really dark, because he's insane. And he's talking to the gold. He calls it Mr. Pocket. And you can see he's just out of his mind. And then, of course, he gets shot, kills the kid, buries the kid, leaves the valley. And, of course, as soon as he leaves, all the wildlife kind of come back, and it's just okay. It's really fucked up. When you really look at what it is, like the way he's insane and the ruthlessness of it, like the kid's gonna shoot him in the back and take his gold, then he ends up killing the kid and burying him in this unmarked grave that no one's gonna really dig up, because once you realize that someone found gold there, you realize they're not just gonna leave, and so you're not really gonna open it up and see this kid's grave, and he's just gonna be there buried there forever. So kind of fucked up. Next up, the gal who got rattled. I didn't really know any of the people in this. They look familiar, but I didn't really know them very much. So you have Alice Longbow, I believe is the way you pronounced it, played by Zoe Kazan. Zoe Kazan, I had to look up. She looked familiar, but I didn't know what she's from. I still don't really recognize her too much. I've seen movies she's been in, but I couldn't tell you. I wouldn't be able to point out a character that she's in overall, but she was really good in this for the type of character she plays. What I didn't know about her is I knew the name, I just didn't know what the name was. She is in the Big Sick, which came out a while ago. She plays Kumail Nanjiani's wife, I believe, in it, whose character is based on his real life wife, Emily V. Gordon, in it. I'll talk about the movie another time, probably. Maybe not, I don't know. But she's in that, so that's where I knew her from. I didn't know I knew her from that. Bill Heck, who is an American actor, best known for being in The Leftovers, is what I knew him from. He's also was in the show The Good Wife, and I guess he's in the show The Alienist, which is apparently a really good show. I didn't know anything about it. But I knew him. I recognized him from Leftovers. He's a Broadway actor, and he's done a bunch of stuff. But he plays a character in this one as well. He plays Bill Knapp. Yep, Billy Knapp, who's the main guy in it. And then Granger Hines plays Mr. Arthur. I didn't really know him. He looked familiar, but I just didn't know what he's from. And then I looked up his things, and I was like, I'm never going to be able to pinpoint who this guy is and anything he's been in. But he looked familiar, so I knew him somewhere. He actually plays a pretty cool character in it as well. So this one was pretty heavy right away. So Alice Longbow and her brother Gilbert, who's an inept businessman, are journeying with a wagon train across the prairie towards Oregon, where he's going to meet up with a business partner who's going to marry his sister, and they're going to go into a partnership together. Pretty crazy. But he dies of cholera shortly after they leave on the journey. And so Alice has to somehow still make it to Oregon, but she doesn't know about the money because they didn't have any, because they spent all of it trying to get it to Oregon. But her the hired hand that Gilbert hired is claiming that Gilbert promised him $400 for the trip. Well, she doesn't have the money, so she asks Bill Heck's character, Billy Knapp, for help, like, you know, what should she do? Should she turn back now? You know, whatever. And so they basically make this pact where he's going to get half of which is expects, you know, at that point, once he gets to a halfway point, and then he has the choice that he can return home, fearing that Gilbert's money is actually buried with him because she can't find it. Again, she goes with Billy, who basically is supporting her and helping her kind of not get basically bamboozled or whatever by this kid. And there's this whole thing about this Gilbert's small dog who's annoying everybody because he keeps barking all at night, called President Pierce, obviously named after Franklin Pierce. And so he basically tells her that they need to, like, kill the dog to get rid of it. So they basically chase him off. Billy promises he's going to, you know, make it quick. He ends up missing. Dog runs away. So basically through the whole thing, Billy grows fond of Alice and proposes to solve her dilemma by marrying her in Fort Lemaire. Laramie. Sorry. Didn't remember what it's called. I had to read for it. Basically assuming Gilbert's debt to Matt and then retiring from leading the wagon, where he would then start a family upon the 640 acres in Oregon, which he can claim according to the Homestead Act. Alice is surprised by this, but she has also grown fond of him, so she accepts. Billy then informs Mr. Arthur that at the end of this will be his last ride together. And this is where it starts to get dark. This is where it turns dark. So the following morning, Mr. Arthur notices Alice is missing. He rides over the hills to find her reunited with President Pierce, the dog. And they're laughing at, she's laughing as the dog barks at the antics of prairie dogs. Miss Arthur then spots an Indian sentinel, and advising a war party. He gives Alice a pistol, so that if he is killed, she can shoot herself to avoid capture, because, well, Indians will not do good things to her. So, Miss Arthur then basically drives back the charging warriors with his rifle, but the reigning warrior momentarily appears to kill him. He then kills the Indian, then realizes that he appeared to be dead. So he walks over and Alice had shot herself as he instructed. So Mr. Arthur sadly walks back to the wagon train with President Pierce, unsure what he's going to say to Billy Knapp. So you can see, fucked in dark, fucked up. It's super, super just. It starts really rough with the conversations that her brother's having about her and things like this. You can see she's not happy. He's a piece of shit. He dies. She's lost. Billy's slowly, you know, makes his plan. You think it's, oh, happy ending. Nope. She ends up killing herself by accident, but on purpose because of what happened. And then now Mr. Arthur then has to explain to the, at the time, super happy Billy exactly what happened and the fact that, you know, obviously this is not going to be his last ride because he has nothing to stop riding the wagon train for, so fucked up. Last one, The Mortal Remains. This one I have a theory about what it actually is, and I'll talk about it at the end when I go through the whole thing. This one stars a handful of people, five people, and all five of them are notable people. You have Tyne Daly, if you don't know who Tyne Daly is, she has been a lot of things. She played Detective Mary Beth Lacey in Cagney and Lacey, she's been in musicals and all sorts of movies throughout the time. She's produced a lot of stuff. I don't think she has directed anything. I think she's just been acting and producing. I don't think she directed anything. Nope. And she's starring and stuff like that. But she's been on Broadway. She's done off-Broadway. She's been on stage stuff. She's won a Tony Awards, I believe, for stuff. Yeah, anyways, that's Tyne Daly. It's Lacey, Cagney Lacey. You have Brendan Gleeson, who I've actually talked about on this podcast before, just not recently. Not recently that I know of. The last time, ooh, man, it was the last time I talked about him. Might have been last year. And around this time? No, when did, no. I talked about him, maybe I did. I talked about his son, and I maybe talked about him. Anyways, so Brendan Gleeson is awesome. He's been in a bunch of stuff. Most recently, most notably, I guess you really say, is he plays Mad-Eye Moody in the Harry Potter movies. Alistair Mad-Eye Moody. He's in those movies. He was one of my favorite movies he was in was called In Bruges. With Colin Farrell, a bunch of other people too, but he's in that. Let's see, most notably, his newest thing, he was in the TV show adaptation of Mr. Mercedes by Stephen King. He plays Bill Hodges, and he's fantastic in it. I knew he'd be fantastic in it. I just didn't picture him as Bill Hodges, and then once I found out it was him, I was like, actually, that works out really well. I even like the fact that he has his Irish accent. He doesn't try to get rid of it. He speaks with it in that, too. So, pretty fun. But his son, Domhnall Gleeson, is an amazing actor as well. It's Brendan Gleeson. Then you have... I didn't know who this guy was at all when I watched this movie. I tell you right now, I still don't even know who this person is. His name is Jonjo O'Neill. He's an actor. He's an Irish actor. He plays a gentleman in this. I can honestly say I don't know of anything he's been in. Television wise, he was in an episode of the movie, the Doctor movie, the Day of the Doctor. He was in the TV show The Fall, which if you don't know what The Fall is actually really fucked up show with Gillian Anderson and Jamie Dornan. I don't know, but he's a serial killer in this, but he's also the dude from the 50 Shades movie. He's also in my cousin's new movie, which at one point I'll talk about on the main podcast and on here as well. So Jonjo O'Neill is he's an actor. He's been in a bunch of stuff, mostly theater and overseas and in British shows. He's pretty fucking good in this one. Then you have Sal Rubinick, who has been in a lot of things. TV wise, he's been in a bunch of stuff. Film. So I guess TV wise, his biggest. He was in Frasier a bunch of episodes. He was in Warehouse 13 on sci-fi for fucking 5 or 6 years. He was in those Jesse Stone movies. I didn't realize that. I never watched any of those, but I didn't know he was in those. If you see him, you've seen him on a bunch of stuff. But he's most notable, I think, of when I see him, I always think of Warehouse 13. That's just me. Movie-wise, he's done so many things. This list is so long. I don't know which one to say he's recognizable for. It doesn't matter, man. Older movies, but, whatever. That's Sal Rubinick. And then last but not least is Chelsea Ross. Chelsea Ross, I have not talked about in a while. I'm almost positive I talked about him at one point on this show. But anyways, he's most notably, he is from he's in a couple different things. His most known role, I would think, is from Major League. We played Eddie Harris, the older pitcher, to Charlie Sheen's younger pitcher. I mean, he's been in a bunch of stuff. TV shows, he's been a handful of episodes of a bunch of different stuff. Movie-wise, he's been in a bunch of things. And it took me a while to actually recognize him in this movie because I was like, man, this guy looks and sounds like he looks familiar in a way, but like, his voice kind of sounds familiar. And then I realized who he was. I was like, oh, shit, that's Chelsea Ross. That's fucking rad. But he's in this. He plays Trapper. So this one, so you have Tyne Daly, who plays Lady, who's known as Miss Betjeman. I thought it was Benjamin, but it's Betjeman, B-E-T-J-E-M-A-N, Betjeman. You have Brendan Gleeson, who plays the Irishman, or Clarence. Oof, sorry. You have Jonjo O'Neill, who plays the Englishman, whose name is Thigpen. Then you have Sal Rubinek, who plays the Frenchman, whose name is Rene. And then you have Chelsea Ross, who plays Trapper, which you never actually find out his name. They just refer to him as Trapper. Or the Trapper, or a Trapper, whatever you want to call him. So without going through the whole thing, basically these five get on a wagon as the sun's setting on their way to Fort Morgan in Colorado. And in the ride, they have this discussion about humanity and how that there's only one, like the Trapper believes there's one type of, everyone's about the same type of basic needs. They're all one person, just like the animals he traps. The Tyne Daly's character, Miss Betjeman, believes that there's two types of people. There's the upright and then there's the sinning, because she's a Christian. Her husband actually teaches moral and spiritual hygiene as an adult education teacher, which means he teaches adults, he's an adult who teaches. It's a big thing back in the day. I guess I read about it. And then Renee is against, actually technically both of them, but in a way is very cynical, because he doesn't believe that marriage is sacred, and that even this devout Christian's husband, even though he's a devout Christian, probably isn't loyal to her either. And I think it's a big thing. And then she has this panic attack, and Brendan Gleeson's character sings this this song called it's a bittersweet folk song called the Unfortunate Lad, who brings her out of the thing. And then basically you find out that Clarence and Thigpen are reapers or bounty hunters, and that they are basically bringing a body to Fort Morgan for a bounty. And then you basically, during her panic attack, the Trapper tries to stop the stagecoach. Renee calls to the coach, or the guy running it, and says that the driver of the coach tries to get him to stop, and Thigpen explains that the driver's policy is not to stop for any reason. And that's when the Clarence sings a song. She comes out of it. They explain what their business is, and he has this monologue where Thigpen basically remarks that he enjoys watching their prey die, especially the expression in their eyes as they navigate the passage and try to make sense of it. And so he basically says that he distracts the target, and then Clarence thumps them, and that's how they do their business. So my theory about this, and so they make it to the hotel. Finally, Clarence and Thigpen get out. They carry a body into the hotel, very shook by what has happened. The lady, the Trapper, and the Frenchman all get out reluctantly after watching them bring the body in, the corpse into the hotel, and they slowly dismount. And the coach then departs without any luggage being unpacked. Renee, Miss Betjeman, and the Trapper then warily make their way into the hotel's front door. I think this is literally them being escorted into the afterlife. And it's reason it's very dark in general, but the reason I say this is when they get there, the hotel doors are white, and they open up, and it's dark, and then there's a lit staircase that brings them upstairs, like you're walking upstairs into, you know, heaven. And the coachman is dressed in black, and he doesn't stop, and he's, you know, whatever. But it's very dark. It is very somber. But yeah, that's really it. That's it for the six vignettes that make up the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. So apparently I should tell you, the stories are based on a bunch of different things. All Gold Canyon is based on a story by a guy named Jack London. I should have said this earlier, but I kind of forgot about it. He's a writer from the past. He's old, as you can plainly tell from the story. The Girl Who Got Rattled is a story by Stuart Edward White, and then various short stories that are written by Joel and Ethan Coen, and starring these fantastic people. So that's it for the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Ends January for us, our theme in January. I do not have yet completely nailed down what February's theme is. Most likely it's going to be romantic comedy of some sort, probably, because it is, you know, obviously Valentine's Day. But I haven't totally made my mind up yet. I'll let you know next week. Yeah, that's it for the Coen Brothers movies. So if you want to watch this, it is released on Netflix. You can watch it now. It's quite long. Total runtime, 133 minutes. But it's one of those things where, like, you should pay attention to it. It's not one of those things you sit there and then kind of ignore in the background. It's very powerful and very, I think it's very well acted. And don't let the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, the first vignette, lull you into a state of happiness, because, like I said, it's just going to get dark and dark and gloomy and just so fucked up. But that's just me. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's how I see it. That's it for this week and this month and the theme of the Coen Brothers movies, like I said before. Yeah, we'll wrap it up. As for I'm reading, outside of this, watching stuff and whatever, I read, I finished Dial D for Dead Men, which is hilarious. And then I picked up the next, I know I told you I was going to read The Passage, but I haven't got to it yet. I wanted to read the next Space Team book, which is actually pretty cool, because Dan Deadman, Ollie, and I can't think of his name right now, the other character from the Deadman books are actually in this one, so that's pretty cool. But it's really fun, it continues right off of what ended in the Time Titan of Tomorrow. This one's called the King of Space Must Die, and really, there's some really funny parts in it. It's just continuing on how amazing of a story and a world and characters that Barry J. Hutchinson Hutchins has created in the Space Team ones, that I'm just burning through it. I'm like, I'm almost done with it completely, and it's fantastic. But I do believe my next book will be The Passage, because I really did enjoy the show, and I'll talk about it another time. But I think that's it for this week, everybody. And as usual, let's be awesome. I'll talk to you guys next week.